News Radio 790 WAEB, the Lehigh Valley's news, traffic, and weather, an iHeart Radio station.
Ah, but welcome back to the home of explanations. You've got more than money. You've got Gene Dickinson, your host, your personal financial advisor, live this Saturday morning. It's getting just gorgeous out there. Absolutely beautiful. When I left this morning at O'Dark 30, it was super foggy up in the Poconos. Came to Wind Gap Hill. It was still a little foggy coming through, but it was gray and drizzly and ick. And now it's just flat out gorgeous. I think, well, Charlie Stops here. He may have brought the good weather with him. He's that sunshiny kind of guy. That's a great thing. 610-720-7900. Gene at AskMTM.com, MoreThanMoneyOnline.com. Joining me in the studio is attorney Charles Stopp, Steckel and Stopp, and works with a gentleman who was on not very long ago, Mr. Keith Stroll. Keith is... he handled himself beautifully. That radio's not easy, and for a young guy like Keith, and we had great time. So God bless us. We'll have another in-depth discussion this morning. If you have questions about estate planning, particularly 610-720-7900, we're going to introduce Attorney Stopp here momentarily. But a very, very kind gentleman, Philip, called to make sure that in answering our last question, where the folks had IRAs and 401ks, that if they intend to keep those after they turn 70 and a half, RMDs have to be taken from each. So if you're going to make your life simple, you'll roll the money out of the 401k into an IRA and make sure that you can do that. Keep your options completely open as to which accounts that you take the RMDs from. But if you are maintaining a 401k into your RMD phase of your life, 70 and a half or beyond, yep, the IRS requires that you take a specific RMD from each 401k. Philip, I appreciate that clarification indeed. It's rare that we do that, rare that we find that. Very few people after 70 and a half either are working and maintaining the 401ks or are maintaining the 401ks after ending their work because IRA rollovers are so prevalent. But it's an important clarification. So if you're over 70, if you're required to take RMDs and you happen to have a 401k, make sure you're taking RMDs from each. So we welcome to the studio attorney Charles Stopp. Good morning, sir.
Gene, thanks so much. It's like fun. And am I remembering, though, on a 401k, if one continues to work beyond 70 and a half, and they're less than a 5% equity owner, does that exception still remain that you can delay?
It absolutely does, and it's a very powerful opportunity for folks who continue to work, which is becoming more and more prevalent. And it's even become part of the succession planning for small businesses. We'll use More Than Money as an example. We have a number of shareholders. Gene would be the largest. So is he beyond 5%? Sure. Is there a reason where between now and 5 or 6 years from now where I reach 401k, IRA, RMD world that I might want to reduce my ownership? The answer is absolutely. But you're absolutely right. The recommendation says that if you're not a major shareholder and if you're still employed, and lots of folks still are at age 70, no RMDs, and you can keep making contributions. Mm. With an IRA, you can't. 70 says no more contributions, and you have to take money. 401k, a little flexibility there. So, sir, give our listeners just a little background, your practice, and kind of what you focus on.
Yeah, the practice has been around, over 70 years, starting sometime in the 40s. The founder of the practice was a fellow by the name of William Steckel, who had been a law clerk for a federal judge after law school. And back in those days, the federal judges used to ride the circuit. They were all over the place.
Nice.
So he traveled San Francisco, New Orleans, and all those things when he was a young law clerk.
Wow.
Came back to the Valley, to his hometown, started a small town practice. When I got out of law school in 1975, actually I started in 1974 working for him while I was still in law school, I joined him in 75, and the firm has had, kind of organic growth, since that time.
Has it always been based in Slatington?
It started there, but we have an office in the Parkland area now, probably there, I don't even know, 30, 35 years. We have an office in Northampton, an older attorney there who'd been in practice for many years wanted to slow down, so he kind of merged into us. And there's an affiliate office we have in Bethlehem.
Very good. But the gentleman who started the firm started in Slatington.
He did.
Which makes sense, because if you've seen San Francisco and New Orleans, so similar to Slatington, I'm sure he felt right at home.
I bet.
I'm sure that's the way that works. So at this point, your firm has a fair number of attorneys, I'm guessing?
Yeah. We have four partners, and there's a bunch of what they call of counsel attorneys.
Sure.
Who have gotten to the stage of their career where they'd like to slow down a little bit but still want to do certain things. So they've joined us as well, and they bring, their own areas of expertise that can be called upon as needed to help clients.
Outstanding. Is there an area of the law that you tend to spend most of your time in?
Yeah, I mean, there's other people in the firm who do other things, but what I principally do is estate and trust planning, and then estate and trust administration, and real estate goes kind of hand in hand with that.
Sure.
There's a few other things I've always touched on, but that's the core things of what we do. We're just a small town country practice, but we try to do the best we can to work with our folks.
Don't let him fool you. Come on. These guys, they're sharp. They got the experience. They got experience and energy. Boy, that's a wonderful combination. You toss in some young guys like Keith Stroll and some experience like some of your folks have carried around. Oof.
Yeah, the idea was, folks have relied upon us just in your practice too, Gene, with generations, grandparents, the kids and now the grandkids. And, we wanted to make sure we had some succession in place so when it's time to ride off into the sunset or if we're called to other places by the guy upstairs, the clients are hopefully largely taken care of.
And it's always about the clients. Absolutely. That's the difference between some corporate offices, that it's all about the bottom line. And for some of the rest of us, whether we're old country financial advisors or whatever.
You're not going to get away with that one either.
We are absolutely, we're way more concerned about our clients and what's going to happen too. So good for you. Now, you've spent a little bit of time, or more than a little bit of time, because of the real estate connection, on the kind of the agricultural side of this estate planning issue.
Yeah, that's a bit of a specialty. And, having grown up in a northern end of the county in a small village, back in the 50s and 60s, back in those days, there were still small family farms.
Sure.
Hardly that way anymore.
Yeah.
So, the local kids in a neighborhood, even though my family did not own a farm, everybody else did.
Mm-hmm.
You end up doing things like picking potatoes and helping baling hay and that sort of stuff, which was kind of a fun experience.
Sure.
Many of our my friends years ago have now congealed their farm ownership into larger operations.
Mm.
And you kind of develop that. Years ago, Penn State University used to offer out of their agricultural school seminars on things specific to agricultural ownership. And we kind of loaded ourselves up on continuing education courses and that stuff too, because there was a need for it for the clients.
Sure.
So there are a number of, and whenever you're ready, we'll get into this, a number of death tax elections that can be made to really save clients quite a bit of inheritance tax, Pennsylvania inheritance.
Yeah, let's shift right into that. So if we've got a valuable piece of real estate that may not necessarily generate tremendous amounts of cash flow, there's a lot of challenges for a family to keep that business running.
Yes, and there's various categories. There's a family that may be an operator who maybe they've acquired 500, 1,000 acres, which is creates an economy of scale to allow them to stay in operation. You really can't operate on a traditional 100-acre farm anymore. There's just not enough revenues there to do it. So you have, a group, business group that got together and have, a bigger mass of acreage.
Sure.
And then you have those who just own real estate and they haven't farmed or operated for years. So there's a number of elections that can be made depending on the category there, Gene.
Okay.
Let me start with a little example.
Sure.
you're familiar, and a lot of your listeners are familiar, with what's generally called the Clean and Green Acts for real estate taxation.
Sure.
Now, you know, one is called Act 319. That was started in 1974. And then there's an Act 515, which started previously, but in Lehigh County, for example, Lehigh County years ago passed a resolution, the commissioners did, that they're not accepting any more 515 applications. So those who were grandfathered can remain. Those who want to enter a program similar to Act 515, a clean and green program, would have to apply for this Act 319.
And of course, these are to help with real estate taxes.
Exactly. Now, the principle is, and you touched on it earlier, is that real estate is necessary in a large number of acres to sustain a farming operation. So if the real estate is maybe zoned commercially or industrially or even for single family housing, the normal base assessment is kind of high, which creates kind
of
high real estate taxes.
Of course.
And it makes it hard to operate because you typically don't generate enough revenues per acre as a farmer to pay those. So,
sure.
You know, the farm, like anything else in life, there's a farm lobby, and it's a fairly strong one, maybe even stronger years ago. This is speculation. When you had more family farms, you had more political clout. But now the larger operations have political clout by economic reasons instead of maybe as voting reasons
and
numbers.
Sure. Yeah.
So they passed this act, we'll go on Act 319, which essentially says if the landowner agrees to restrict the operation of the land in certain ways, and it's typically for growing crops, there's a couple other categories called forest reserve and that sort of stuff. What happens is the county assessment becomes artificially much lower than the highest and best type use of the normal assessment, like your house.
Sure.
Okay, or like your business.
Sure.
So the way it's graded is the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture does studies on soil types and the quality of soil types. Now, I don't know a whole lot about that. I've seen the chart, but if you have high-quality loam soils or whatever it is, maybe the assessment or the fair market value per acre on that is $1,200. And if you have like a shaley soil, or pasture, which is marshy, only good for cows, maybe that's $100, $200 per acre.
Sure.
Much, much less, though, than fair market value.
$10,000, $15,000, $20,000 an acre.
Yeah, much. And in percentage terms, typically you see it 60% less, maybe to 90% less than the normal fair market value.
So there's real opportunities to save on real estate taxes year by year by year.
Exactly.
What happens when the patriarch is no longer with us?
Okay, well, whomever may own the operation going forward, whether it's a family member or not, or whether it's sold, the land is sold, it can remain in that act, and many buyers view this as a kind of a bonus. Not all view it as a bonus. An example would be the patriarch dies, and they have, 200 acres of land. Often when it's offered for sale, auction sale or through a realtor or privately, there are provisions negotiated in the agreement of sale, which says, the buyer is obligated to continue this preferential assessment, and if not, then the buyer has to pay what's called the back taxes, which is a difference between, it's a delta between the lower artificial 319 value and the higher fair market value, going back for, I believe it's 7 years at 7% interest.
So it's a lot of money.
Kind of a nut.
Of course.
It's usually negotiated that way.
Okay.
There are buyers, Gene, who kind of want to move to the country, and if they have at least 10 acres, they can put their, McMansion on that and have 10 acres of land that can qualify for this Act 319. The land would continue to enjoy the lower assessment. House won't. Improvements won't. But, folks moving into the area who want one of those estates can still take advantage of this Act 319. There's been some political movement by saying, well, that's really not what the intent was, and it's not fair, but it's the law, and many people take advantage of it. So if you have a 100-acre farm, it's possible to divide it up into 10-acre parcels, continue the Act 319 treatment without a breach, without having to pay the rollback and the interest that goes along with it. Now, yeah.
Pretty nice.
So this is not the death tax part that was, we're going to work into, but this is the base, kind of the predicate upon which the rest is.
Let's work into the death tax.
Okay.
So Patriarch is not selling. He's ascending. and let's say son and daughter-in-law want to take over the business. Now what happens?
A couple different categories. The way that has been available for many more years is a thing called, they call it different names, like a car, a vehicle, and all that stuff. But the most common way of describing it is called a special farmland valuation. Mm-hmm. Okay. So patriarch dies, let's say there's no surviving spouse, passes down to kids, and as you know, the normal Pennsylvania inheritance tax rate is 4.5%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's a post-mortem, post-after-death election that can be made, whereby on the inheritance tax return, one would disclose the fair market value of the land.
Mm-hmm.
Why? For basis purposes.
Sure.
Okay. But also makes this artificial, I guess it's artificial, election to have the inheritance tax calculated on this, essentially the Act 319 assessment, which often saves, again, same as before, 50, 70, 75% of the inheritance taxes. Quite
so it could
significant.
Be. Yes, indeed. So if you've got, I'm picking numbers out of thin air, a $3 million tract of land that for market value purposes, $3 million would be fantastic, but we're farming it and our incomes are modest, our assets are modest. That's no shock to any farmers listening.
Yeah.
And yet the family wants to continue to farm. Instead of 4.5%, 120, 130, $135,000 roughly in taxes, they might end up at half of that.
Much less than half in typical cases.
So they might end up saving $70,000 or $80,000 or $90,000
Yes.
With this post-mortem election.
Yes. Now there's a price. The price is, one has to maintain the farm in compliance with this special farmland operation for 7 years after the decedent's death.
Sounds pretty reasonable.
So that even if the family does not want to continue to operate or farm, or maybe the parents got to the age where they were no longer operating, they want to liquidate. The kids want to liquidate. They'd rather have cash than, a farm.
Right.
Again, in the provisions of sale, if it's negotiated in, same way for the Act 319 for real estate tax purposes, Gene, as we talked about, there's provisions negotiated in that the buyer agrees to comply with this farmland valuation for a period of 7 years, or the buyer bears a breach. And the seller gets the higher basis. And why don't you explain that part?
Yeah, the higher basis is that's just glorious. In the sale process, of course, you end up and effectively having zero gain and zero tax.
Yeah.
That if you're liquidating a $3 million asset and you have that's maybe been in the family for 80 or 90 or 100 years and can get away with zero income tax. That means God smiled on you.
Yeah. Instead of a basis, maybe the acquisition price for the whole farm was $25,000 or $30,000 back in those. You've seen those.
Oh, absolutely. So they could easily be looking at $1 million, $1.2 million my apologies. They could easily be looking at $500,000, $600,000 in capital gains tax, or it could be zero.
Yeah, it could, and it works. Now, there had a little sidebar. Is this? Do you remember the name Bill Dipert at all?
I remember the name, sure.
Okay, Bill had been head of the Pennsylvania Inheritance Tax Division, was a lecturer and presenter on this sort of stuff. So he retired now. He's still a consultant in the industry. But years ago when I first was touching on these things, I had a discussion with Bill. And Bill says, if you want to elect this savings for inheritance tax purposes, your client's not going to get the higher basis. You might want to consider that. So I think revenue was posturing a little bit to discourage inheritance tax elections to generate more revenue for the state by saying, or at least questioning, the basis wouldn't be there. I did some research into the Internal Revenue Code and just to verify, and there's no exception that provides the lower basis. And we've been doing this for years and years without any pushback from the IRS. And Bill at one point kind of suggested he was going to place a call into the IRS regional office to suggest that under these circumstances, people should not enjoy the higher basis. Whether he did or not, I don't know. But if he, even if he did, it didn't work.
What would poking the bear is not normally the right way to go. We're having a conversation with Attorney Charles Stopp, Steckel and Stopp, Slatington, and well beyond, all throughout the Lehigh Valley, a law firm that offers lots of different kinds of legal services. But specifically this morning, we were talking about estate planning, and particularly with agricultural interest. If you were to look at your practice over the last year or so in terms of the estate planning you've done, how proportionately, a large proportion in the agricultural side, or is it more the blocking and tackling the basics?
Yeah, more of the basics. The agricultural part of it, boy, just kind of almost guessing. I would say it probably only affects 8 to 10% of the estates that our office helps people with.
Right.
But in that small sector, the dollar savings are kind of significant.
Mm. Yeah, a lot of folks have the misimpression that because the federal estate tax is now set up that virtually no one in the Lehigh Valley pays federal estate tax, that there's no real motivation to plan out the wills, the trusts, the medical directives, etc. I have seen the exact opposite. The taxation may have driven people previously, but it's the personal objectives that need to be controlled, need to be planned out. Am I on the right track?
Yeah, it's kind of it's kind of specific to the client. Your practice is that way. You know, you have clients that are maybe similar. Hardly ever will you find two clients that are alike, and that's kind of the, shall I say, the fun and the art of,
sure,
of doing this.
Absolutely.
Would that be a bad characterization?
No, absolutely. It's the personalization,
yeah,
getting to know the people and what they really need and what they really want.
Yeah, it's great fun. Yeah, and touching back, if you don't mind me going aside again.
You got about 30 seconds to do this. Okay, very good.
We'll come back.
As we're coming to the end of our interview with Attorney Stopp, we appreciate his spending part of his Saturday morning with us indeed. If folks are out there listening going, there's a gentleman that I think I need to talk to, what's the easiest way for them to reach you?
Maybe on the tennis court.
Very nice. Very nice.
But the office that I typically am stationed at would be, the phone number would be 610-767-3861.
Very good.
And then, you know, Denise, you
of course
work with Denise. Stephanie has, and you have, so she'd be the contact person, Denise Ort, and then she's kind of the gatekeeper.
She's fantastic. She is fantastic.
Well, I always tell her that she makes, and our other staff, everybody on our staff, we have a wonderful staff, you know, makes the older guys look like they know what they're doing.
That's the key. We're smart enough to hire wonderful folks just like that. Attorney Stopp, thank you so much.
Sure thing.
We're coming to our next break, which is our last break of the show, and then we'll have a half an hour of your questions and emails. I've got some very, very good ones you've sent in, including one about some folks who got lucky and won the lottery big time. That's cool stuff. We'll be answering that question here momentarily. If you've got a question, 610-720-7900. You can send me an email, gene@askmtm.com. And if you've got someone further afield, just have them log on to morethanmoneyonline.com and they can listen live. We're going to take your questions, your calls, your concerns after this on More Than Money. Right down. Welcome back. You've got More Than Money. Gene Dickinson, your host, your personal financial advisor. We have a call coming in right away, so that's fantastic. 610-720-7900. You can send me email, gene@askmtm.com, or you can log on to morethanmoneyonline.com, and that works very well indeed. We've had so many great calls this morning, some very, very interesting calls, not just the questions, but the clarifications and the help. It's one of the great things about being part of our More Than Money community. We've got folks that are trying to help all over the place. They're helping you. They're helping me. Let's go to the phones, and we're going to talk to Mike. Mike, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
Great. How are you doing?
Very well. How may we serve you?
I have a question on these on the agricultural tax breaks and all that.
Sure.
I have a property that's 13.5 acres, 13.6 acres. It's mostly wooded, rural property, and my house is on it. And I would like to find out what would be the best thing for me to do to reduce my taxes, and I plan on retiring in a couple years.
Yeah, there's a couple things that you should be looking at. Number one is this qualification for the Act 319, the clean and green. Typically, as I understand it, it's administered through the counties. Do you know what county you live in?
Northampton.
Yeah, Northampton. If you contact the Northampton County offices in Easton, I think they can direct you to the appropriate department that handles this. And there are very specific requirements that you have to attend to, how much property has been used for the residents, et cetera, et cetera. But qualification is going to end up saving you a fair amount of taxes. As you might know, your assessment's based on both the value of the land and the value of the improvements. And as I understand it, the value of the improvements is not going to change, that the assessment's not going to change, but the valuation for the land could be considerably lower. And depending on that differential, you may save a great deal of money in taxes or not so much.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I appreciate your call very much, sir.
Yep. Have a blessed week.
You too. God bless. 610-720-7900. I see a growing trend in folks that share blessings, and I appreciate that very, very much. A blessed week is a great thing to be looking forward to. 610-720-7900. The market's nice this week. Job report, very, very nice this week. You have got to have, if you're looking economically, a smile on your face. That certainly seems to get us going in the right direction. If you've got a question about your direction, 610-720-7900. Gentleman writes, a group of coworkers and I have won nice lottery winnings, $3,000 apiece. Congratulations. Oh, that's fantastic. And the fact you did it as a group, beautiful. They had to pay taxes at 28%, left approximately 63%. When I checked my taxes, the accountant entered $93,000 amount in the winning line, which influenced line six. Looks like I'm paying the tax twice. Okay, I'm absolutely taking a stab at this. If you received a check for 63, and if they withheld 28%, so that would be roughly $30,000, your taxable amount that's reported for federal purposes is absolutely $93,000. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. If your accountant has done this correctly, and again, I'm taking a stab at this, not being a CPA, I'm not an EA, I'm an SOB, so that doesn't qualify me to make tax judgment, but I'm pretty familiar with how this works. They should show the $93,000 as lottery winnings, and then they should also show the $30,000 that was withheld as taxes already paid. So when they get to the portion of your tax return that shows taxes withheld from your earnings, for example, or maybe quarterly payments that you might have made, in addition to that, there should be a $30,000 credit for the amount that was already withheld. So, no, you should not be paying twice. You should be It sounds like he's reporting or she's reporting it correctly as the gross amount. That's exactly correct. And hopefully corresponding withholding, that $30,000 number, has also been recorded correctly as a credit. So, no, you should not end up paying twice. If you think you have, by the way, make a copy or bring a copy and make an appointment. Just stop over. Literally, it's something that we can check in 5 minutes. In 5 minutes. If you're not really sure, the peace of mind, 5 minutes, come on. You're welcome to join us. Stop in at the More Than Money World Headquarters in the Holy Lands between Bethlehem and Nazareth. And as Easton's coming up, hey, you want to spend more time in the Holy Lands between you think that office, you think we picked that by accident? I think not. No, this is good stuff. So happy to have that conversation with you. And congratulations. Goodness gracious. What a wonderful thing to happen. And the fact that you guys did it as a group, I think that's really, really cool. A few weeks ago when they had that, $700-800 million lottery winner out in Wisconsin, one person. I mean, that's cool, but can you imagine, even after taxes, it ended up being, they took lump sum at like 480, and they took all the taxes out, you ended up with like $300 million even. You could pick like, maybe like if you had granddaughters that you really liked, maybe you don't really like them, but maybe you tolerate them. Maybe they're annoying, but you still really, all right. So you could drop, $10 million a piece, and you'd still be going, what do I do with the other 280? That's a cool thing. But hey, congratulations. Fantastic. 610-720-7900, Gene at AskMTM.com. Boy, iHeartMedia is a cool thing. And I say that because it allows us to share our show. You heard a gentleman call in earlier from Washington, D.C. We've had callers from California, from Oregon, from Washington State, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Virginia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, Florida. Oh, my gosh, all the time. Now, this gentleman, I don't know if he tells me where they live now. At any rate, here it goes. My wife and I were home for the holidays with my family in Macungi. Both Saturday mornings we were here. My mom had your show on in the radio in the kitchen. Nice. We listened. Now, this is my kind of guy, snarky. Mostly we listened because mom's great breakfasts can be very distracting. All right, so in one sentence, he gets to suck up to mom and gets to be snarky with me. I admire that. Good for you. Well played. We listened. We really enjoyed it. Now that we're back home, we listen most Saturdays on the web link. You've got my mom and my wife convinced. But my dad and I are both a bit skeptical about you. Jeez. I love this guy. So here's our test question for you. A test question. Gosh, be still my heart. Should my wife and I buy a house or continue to rent and save the difference? He goes through a very detailed explanation of the rent that they're paying and the fact they don't have to pay maintenance and they don't have to pay snow plowing and they don't have to pay and they don't have to pay and that rent is cheaper and they're saving a lot of money. Dad and I have one idea. My wife and mom have a different idea. We can't wait to hear whose side you'll be coming down on. Thanks for not being your typical boring financial show. Well, thanks for not being your typical boring listener. Oh, that's cool. Well, first of all, congratulations to your mom. She's obviously very, very smart. Listens to my show. Fantastic. And smart enough to share it with you guys, young whippersnapper boneheads. Very, very nice of her. Congratulations to you guys for figuring it all out and knowing that you'd like to get good information and have a little fun along the way. So, indeed, iHeartMedia is fantastic. Technology is fantastic. I don't know where these folks are. I wish I did, but that doesn't change the fact that wherever you are, you can get our More Than Money show. So here's a test. And the test question, dad and son believe one thing, mom and wife, daughter-in-law believe something else, and they want me to pick. Okay, son, this is time at your youthful age for you to learn a very important lesson. Your wife is always right. Even when she's wrong, she's right. And the sooner you figure that out, the happier you're going to be. The fact that your dad is being a party to all of this is just, I'm sure, for his own amusement to see how much trouble he can get his son in with his wife. Because, dude, that isn't the way it's going to fly. I guarantee you that I already know what your wife and your mom are saying. They're saying you should buy a house. And you and your dad are smarty pants, and you're going, I can save a bunch of money and put it in the bank or invest it and make more money than I could if I put it in my house. And the reality is that you might be right. You absolutely might be right. If right this moment your rent is below the aggregate cost of buying a house, and with the increase in the standard deduction, you might not get much in the way of a deduction for owning a house. So the tax advantages might be few or non-existent. And so from a financial standpoint, is it possible that after 30 years, you would be financially either slightly ahead or to a nice degree ahead if you rented versus owning a house? The answer is maybe. My gut says no. And I'll give you a good example. I'll give you a couple of good examples. The very first home I bought 40 years ago, my monthly payment, including real estate taxes, was about $190 a month. If I had stayed in that home, first of all, it would have been long paid off. But over the entire 30 years, the mortgage payment, which is about $148, would have stayed exactly the same. Is your rent going to stay exactly the same over the next 30 or 40 years? I think the term is, it's a sophisticated term they teach in MBA school. I think the answer is hell no. No, the landlord's going to raise your rent as often as humanly possible. So does that lock in a low? Yeah, initially it's not low. Right now, if you got an $800, $900, $1,000 payment, you're going, you call that low? No, I don't call it low. I don't call it low now. But in 10, 15, 20 years, if you progress in your career, if you're making higher wages, if you have a higher income, if inflation is working to your benefit and your monthly payment stays relatively flat if you got a fixed mortgage, it's going to get easier and easier and easier. With a rent, it's never going to get easier. It's always going to be higher. Of course, 40 years ago, I was able to rent apartments for $150 a month. Now, $150 a month rents you a garage. I get it, because I was the landlord side. So financially, I don't think you can outperform owning your own home. More importantly, and this is the part that your wife and your mom's trying to kind of get your head on straight, there is a pride of ownership. There is a sense of putting down roots. There's a sense of, this is where my family is. There's the room that was our first nursery. And whether it's a house that you stay in for 3 years and you're proud that you live there and sell it hopefully for a profit, or you stay in for 30 or 40 years and you literally build all those memories, the psychic and personal and spiritual even value of owning your own home, of having those roots, when added to what I think is a break even at best on the financial side, owning your house is a great gig. It's a great gig. Is it a lot of work? Yeah, I'll be leaving here in about 14 and a half minutes. And my wife's going to give me a honey-do list, and off I go. Yeah, it's a lot of work. It's great. It's the best kind of work, and especially when you're surrounded by your family. 610-720-7900. Let's go back to the phones. We talked to Betty. Betty, good morning.
Yes. Gene, I have a question about this crash-proof retirement program that I hear advertised on radio. I have no intention of getting involved.
Okay.
But I'm just mystified at how it works. The only thing I can figure out is that they have annuities, but they're talking about sometimes getting an 8% return. Maybe that's annuity that they bought 15 years ago or something like that. I don't know. But do you have any idea how that works?
Well, Betty, you are absolutely on the right track. You are 100% correct that the crash-proof retirement folks, and I'm very familiar with their program. We have had quite a number of our clients and our More Than Money listeners bring to us proposals that they have received from that group. There was a time not many years ago where I spent a year or so on radio down in Philadelphia on WPHD. That group had their own show, so I got to listen to that quite often. And it's 100% fixed index annuities. It is 100% an annuity platform that they suggest competes with the stock market. It does not. You are 100% correct when you are guessing that some of the rates of return that they're showing, and I see them on the same advertisements on local TV that you do, are rather extraordinary. The folks who have had those types of annuities over many years, going back to when the stock market went up dramatically, yes, they got some pretty reasonable rates of return, sixes, sevens, and eights on average. Some of the less reputable pieces of the annuity sales community, not necessarily crash-proof, but other vendors in that area are touting that you can make 8, 10, 12% today because they're offering bonus earnings in the first year. So the base return might be 3%, but if they offer a 6, 7, 8% bonus, now all of a sudden they can tell you that on a fixed, you can't lose money basis, you can make double digits. And the answer is you can for 1 year, but you are committed, you are tied up, you are locked into that annuity for, in some cases, as long as 15 years. So there are pros and cons. Fixed indexed annuities are not a terrible thing. They can be a terrible thing in two ways. They can be a terrible thing when people like Crash Proof lead innocent people to believe that it's the only game in town. Lots of financial advisors are very comfortable and familiar and educated about fixed indexed annuities and make them part of an integrated, comprehensive retirement plan for their clients, as opposed to Crash Proof, which is, I guarantee you, if you go in there with money, they're going to sell you an annuity. It's a different world. Now, the flip of that is the Ken Fisher world, where he says he will never sell an annuity. Neither of them are correct. The correct approach is what's right for you, what's right for your financial future, what tool best gets you where you wish to be. And that's where you want a full-blown fiduciary-based financial advisor helping out. So your instincts, Betty, are very, very good. You have assessed this correctly. It's all annuities. It's all fixed indexed annuities. And the fact that they're touting some rates of return that make you scratch your head, they should. The folks that we trust, the folks that are honorable in this field, counsel us that over the next 5 years, if you are involved in a fixed indexed annuity, you should expect a total return of between 3.5% and 4% per year. That is not a dreadful return. It's a very reasonable return, especially considering that you have no necessarily have no risk to your principal. It can't go down. But the other thing that they don't talk about very much is that you've got to be dealing with the highest quality companies you can possibly find, because the guarantees are only as good as the people making the guarantees. And some of these folks are not necessarily the ones you would want to trust with your money.
The other thing that I find fascinating is they talk about the stock market crashing and your money's not safe. Well, what do they think those annuities are invested in?
Oh, Betty, God bless you. You are you are seeing through the entire storyline that they're pushing. You are absolutely correct. A lot of particularly the radio shows these days that are thinly veiled infomercials for fixed index annuities talk about the evil stock market, and those evil stock markets going to crash. Virtually every single one of these companies that are offering the fixed indexed annuities are stock companies. And if the stock market crashes and those companies crash, their guarantees go away. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. They are so quick to try to scare people, but they are missing the point. They're not missing it. They're just they're conveniently forgetting that the evil stock market is where the companies reside that produce these annuities that they're selling.
Okay, good. Well, now I understand. I thought I had it figured out.
Oh, you absolutely had to figure it out. You didn't need me. You were doing just fine on your own, Betty. You were doing great.
Well, no, maybe it's good for your audience, too, to understand that.
You're absolutely correct, and I appreciate that you brought it up, and it gave me a chance to kind of get up on my soapbox and say a couple of things. So we, between the two of us, I think we helped a little bit this morning.
Oh, I hope so, because we don't want your clients to get sucked into that.
Exactly right. Exactly. Thank you so much for your phone call.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank
and God,
you.
God bless you.
Thank you. You Take too. Care. Bye.
Bye-bye. What a lovely lady. Oh, my goodness. Smart. Smart. And she sees through these stories. She sees through it. I think lots of folks do. I think lots of folks do. One of the things, and it is confusing, it is challenging. One of the things that I think concerns people a lot is that when they see these crash-proof commercials, they inevitably will have three or four people that they interviewed. Hey, I retired from this. Hey, I did this. Hey, I've been retired, and this has been great, and I'm great, and it's great, and everything's great. These are called testimonials. That's not a surprise. Of course, everybody knows that term, testimonial. If they were licensed financial advisors, if they were registered investment advisors, if they were regulated fiduciaries, they couldn't do it. Crashproof is a perfect example. Some of the others, you've heard them on the radio, where they talk about they rarely, if ever, mention the term annuity. They're so proud. They don't want you to know what it is before they can get you into the office. These are licensed insurance salespeople. And many of them at one point were actually part of the financial advisory world. They might have been licensed in the securities side of life. They might have been registered investment advisors. They might have been. But the regulations for folks who are fiduciaries are very stringent. And they prohibit testimonials. So if you are listening to a sales pitch and it includes people saying, I'm a client, it's fantastic, you should be a client too, as a testimonial, that is a red flag. It announces to the world, we are not fiduciaries. We are not legally bound to put your best interest first. We only have to do whatever we have to do stay under the radar and have your checks clear and earn some pretty reasonably high commissions. So testimonies, if you hear testimonies, whether it's Crash Proof or any other quote unquote financial advisory groups, and there are a fair number even on our very own station who are quick to say, hey, here's a testimonial or come and meet with us and we'll introduce you to a whole bunch of people that will give you testimonials. If a financial advisory group is offering you testimonials, they are not fiduciaries. And they are not legally bound to put your best interest at heart. Yeah, soapbox. Excellent. You're reading my mind. Roberto's fantastic. We have just a couple minutes left in this edition of More Than Money, which means I just have a couple minutes to give you kind of the opportunity, if you are so inclined, to have a second opinion meeting with a More Than Money financial advisor. in the Holy Land. That's the added advantage right there between Bethlehem and Nazareth. You are absolutely welcome to do that. We offer that at absolutely no charge. There's no cost. There's no obligation. There's never any pressure. It's a conversation. It's an opportunity for one of our advisors to get to meet you, get to understand what you need, what your goals are, your objectives, what you're working with. Give you the opportunity to meet them as well. Ask them tons of questions and see if there's a good fit. Because if you've been with us through the whole show, you know that our litmus test is very simple. It's not how much money you have. It's whether we can see our way clear to be your financial advisors for at least the next 20 years. And if you'd like to take that opportunity, all you have to do is ask. You can send me an email, gene@askmtm.com, gene@askmtm.com. You can go on our website, morethanmoneyonline.com, easy way to go. And you can always call. You can go old school on us. You can just give us a phone call into the More Than Money World headquarters, 610-746-7007. 610-746-7007. We'd be happy to meet you. Thanks so much for spending part of your Saturday with us. Enjoy this great spring weekend. We'll see you next time on More Than Money.